In this burning house, nothing was afire in Thuston's room. Nothing was found such as charred fragments of night clothes to suggest that, about 3 o'clock, Thuston, awakened by a fire elsewhere in the house, had gone from his room, and had been burned, and had returned to his room, where he had dressed, but had then been overcome. It may be that he had died hours before the house was afire. It has seemed to me most fitting to regard all accounts in this book, as stories. There has been a permeation of the fantastic, or whatever we think we mean by untrueness. Our stories have not been realistic. And there is something about the story of J. Temple Thurston that, to me, gives it the look of a revised story. It is as if, in an imagined scene, an author had killed off a character by burning, and then, thinking it over, as some writers do, had noted inconsistencies, such as a burned body, and no mention of a fire anywhere in the house. So then, as an afterthought, the fire in the house, but, still, such an amateurish negligence in the authorship of this story, that the fire was not explained. To the fireman, this fire in the house was as unaccountable as, to the coroner, was the burned body in the unscorched clothes. When the firemen broke into Holly Manor, they found the fire raging outside Thuston's room. It was near no fireplace, near no electric wires that might have crossed. There was no odor of paraffin, nor was there anything else suggestive of arson, or of ordinary arson. There had been no robbery. In Thuston's pockets were money and his watch. The fire, of unknown origin, seemed directed upon Thuston's room, as if to destroy, clothes and all, this burned body in the unscorched clothes. Outside, the door of this room was blazing, when the fireman arrived. We have had other stories of unaccountable injuries. According to them, men and women have been stabbed, but have not known until later that they were wounded. There was no evidence to indicate that Thurston knew of his scorched condition, tried to escape, or called for help. There are stories of persons who have been found dead, with bullet wounds, under clothing that showed no sign of the passage of bullets. The police explanation has been of persons who were killed while undressed and were then dressed by the murderers. New York Times, July 1, 1872. Mysterious murder, at Bridgeport, Con, of Capt. Calvo Corus's shot through the heart, clothes not perforated. Brooklyn Eagle, July 8, 1891. Carl Groh found dead, near Maspeth, LI. No marks in the clothes to correspond with wounds in the body. Man found dead in Paris, February 14, 1912. Bullet wound, no sign of bullet passing through clothes. I have come upon so many stories of showers of stones that have entered closed rooms, leaving no sign of entrance in either ceilings or walls, that I have not much sense of strangeness in the idea that bullets, or a knife, could pierce a body, under uncut clothes. There are stories of bullets that have entered closed rooms, without disturbing the materials of walls or ceilings. Dispatch, dated March 3, 1929, to the San Francisco Chronicle, clipping sent to me by Miriam Allen DeFord, of San Francisco Newton, NJ. The county prosecutor's office here is baffled by the greatest mystery in its history. 4 days a rain of buckshot, at intervals, has been falling in the office of the Newton garage, a small room, with one door and one window. There are no marks on the walls or ceiling, and there are no holes in the room, through which the shot could enter. About 2 years later, being not very speedy in getting around to this, I wrote to the county prosecutor at Newton and received a reply, signed by Mr. George R. Vaughn. This occurrence turned out to be a hoax, perpetrated by some local jokesters. There is a story, in the Charleston, SC. News and Courier, November 12, 1886, not of bullets falling in a closed room, but, nevertheless, of unaccountable bullets. Two men in a field, near Walterboro, Collett & Co., SC, small shot falling around them. They thought that it was a discharge from a sportsman's gun, but the rain of lead continued. They gathered specimens, which they took to the office of the Culloden Press. Religio-Philosophical Journal, March 6, 1880. Copying from the Cincinnati Inquirer that, at Lebanon, Ohio, P. People of the town were in a state of excitement, that showers of birdshot were falling from the ceiling of John W. Lingo's hardware store. A committee had been appointed, and according to its report, the phenomenon was veritable, slow-falling volleys of shot, not of the size of any sold in the store, were appearing from no detectable point of origin. There was another circumstance, and it may have had much to do with the phenomenon. About 5 years before, somebody, at night, had entered this store, and had been shot by Lingo, escaping without being identified. In the RPJ, April 24, 1880, a correspondent, J.H. Marshall, wrote, after having read of the Lingo case, of experiences of his, in the summer of 1867. Bullets fell in every room in his house, forcefully, but not with gunshot velocity, large birdshot, broad daylight, short intervals, and then falls that lasted an hour or more. Many bullets appeared, but when Marshall undertook to gather them, he could never find more than half a dozen. About the same time, raps were heard. How bullets could enter closed rooms is no more mysterious than is the howness of Houdini's escape from prison cells, though, according to all that was supposed to be known of physical confinements, that was impossible. In Russia, Houdini made, from a prison van, an escape that involved no expert knowledge, nor dexterity, in matters of locks. He was put into this van, and the door was soldered. He appeared outside, and the police called it an unfair contest, because, so to pass through solid walls, he must have been a spirit. Anyway, this story is told by Will Goldston, president of the Magicians Club, London. I have a story of a horse that appeared in what would, to any ordinary horse, be a closed room. It makes one nervous, maybe. One glances around, and would at least not be incredulous, seeing almost any damned thing, sitting in a chair, staring at one. I'd like to have readers, who consider themselves superior to such notions, note whether they can resist just a glance. The story of the horse was told in the London Daily Mail, May 28, 1906. If anyone wants to argue that it is all fantasy and lies, I think, myself, that it is more comfortable so to argue. One morning, in May, 1906, at Furnace Mill, Lamhurst, Kent, England, the miller, J.C. Playfair, went to his stable, and found horses turned around in their stalls, and one of them missing. It is common for one who has lost something, to search in all reasonable places, and then, in desperation, to look into places where not at all reasonably could the missing thing be. Adjoining the stable, was a hay room, the doorway was barely wide enough for a man to enter. Mr. Playfair, unable to find a trace of his missing horse, went to the hay room doorway, probably feeling as irrational as would somebody, who had lost an elephant, peering into a kitchen closet. The horse was in the hay room. A partition had to be knocked down to get him out. There were other occurrences that could not be. Heavy barrels of lime, with nobody perceptibly near them, were hurled down the stairs. This was in the daytime. Though occasionally I do go slinking about, at night, with our data, mostly ours are sunlight mysteries. The mill was an isolated building, and nobody, at least nobody seeable, could approach it unseen. There were two watchdogs. A large water butt, so heavy that to move it was beyond human strength, was overthrown. Locked and bolted doors opened. I mentioned that the miller had a young son. About the middle of March, 1901, that a woman was stabbed to death, in a fiction or in a scene like an imagined scene that did not belong to what we call reality. The look of the story of Lavinia Farrar is that it, too, was revised, and by an amateurish or negligent or in some unknown way hampered author, who, in an attempt to cover up his crime, bungled, or that this woman had been killed inexplicably, in commonplace terms, and that, later, means were taken, but awkwardly, or almost blindly, and only by way of increasing the mystery, to make the murder seem understandable in terms of common human experience. Cambridge, England, Daily News, March 16, 1901, that Lavinia Farrar, aged 72, a blind woman, of independent means, had been found dead on her kitchen floor, face bruised, nose broken. Near the body was a blood-stained knife, and there were drops of blood on the floor. The body was dressed, and, until the post-mortem examination, no wound to account for the death was seen. At the inquest, two doctors testified that the woman had been stabbed to the heart, but that there was no puncture in her garments, of which there were four. The woman, undressed, could not have stabbed herself, and then have dressed, because death had come to her almost instantly. A knife could not have been inserted through openings in the garments, because their fastenings were along lines far apart. A knife was on the floor, and blood was on the floor. But it seemed that this blood had not come from the woman's wound. This wound was almost bloodless. Only one of her garments, the innermost, was blood-stained, and only slightly. There had been no robbery. The jury returned an open verdict. Upon the evening of March 9, 1929, see the New York Times, March 10, 11, 1929, Isidore Fink, of 4 East 132nd Street, New York City, was ironing something. He was the proprietor of the Fifth Avenue Laundry. A hot iron was on the gas stove. Because of the hold ups that were of such frequent occurrence at the time, he was afraid, the windows of his room were closed, and the door was bolted.